Welcome, everybody, to Blurred Lines. It's your man, Cam. With me, as always, is
the other Cam, Cam Squared,
as well as
Big Josh.
And as always, bringing us the intelligence.
Sinister intelligence, you mean, the professor.
And we are back talking about X-Men 97. Just dropped on Disney Plus. The first two episodes, I think the third one comes Wednesday, or coming up soon, if it hasn't dropped already. But it is all the buzz in the nerd circles that are people that are 35 and older. I was a very mixed bag about this because I am a well-known hater of X-Men the Animated Series. And so I was not super enthused about it. I was kind of like, meh. I mean, I hope it's good, but I'm not really, you know.
Wait, Cam. We have to give people context of why we came to this conclusion because we didn't all start here as hating X-Men.
You know what? That's true. All right. So
I did.
So back in the day, so X-Men came out in the 90s, mid-90s to be exact. And we all watched it because there is nothing else like it on, like, legit.
Right.
X-Men on TV as a cartoon, that is amazing. So,
but also, you have to put yourself in the context of then, and there wasn't a lot of options to watch of
100%.
Things to watch on TV at that time. But
yeah, no, totally true. And so X-Men, it was a big deal because we were like, holy shit, X-Men on, theme song was awesome. You know, Wolverine sounded like what you thought Wolverine would sound like. Storm had this gravitas that was awesome. And so Cyclops was a whiny little bitch. But it was dope because, you know, dude, there was not much out there, you know? And so we all like watched it. Then as we got older and we rewatched it, we're like, wait. Well, the one thing when I did watch it back then, I was really into animation as well. So I was really like annoyed at the animation because it felt squishy and just didn't look right. But I was kind of giving it a pass because of the stories. I'm a lifelong comic book reader, especially the X-Men since I was 5 or 6. So
I was the lone soldier who was like, nah.
Yeah. Back then I was like into it. And then going back rewatching, I was just like, yo, this is horrible. Like, story was bad. Plot was bad. It was super convoluted. Like, the animation was fucking atrocious.
Hey, but in 97.
Yes. 100%. In 97, 100%.
As we were 16, 17 years old, and there was only the Amazing Spider-Man, Batman, and maybe a few others, and then X-Men.
But to be fair, DC's animation was so much better at that time, and that's what I think, that's the whole reason why you look back on it, because I, much like Cam, when I was younger at the time, so the things that I would learn about animation and things like that wouldn't come until later. So yeah, I did enjoy it for the same reason that Cam pointed out. But looking back and watching it, trying to rewatch it, I honestly I cannot, because again, the animation is so bad. If you look at it today, even on Disney Plus, with all the advances and things that we can do in post production now with properties that from the 90s and before, you still see just how bad that animation truly was. Truly is.
Yeah. And I would say also, like, and to give context too, because the X-Men animated series ran from 92 till 97, and it was around 5 seasons. And then for context, Batman, the animated series, that ran from about 92 to about 95. And then it had multiple spinoffs and all the other stuff. So those are kind of like your main, you know, things in terms of animation to really cling on to. All that being said, 30 some odd years later, someone was like, hey, nostalgia is cool. We should make X-Men 97 and pick up where we left off.
We got the X-Men rights back. So how about we bring back that show from the 90s?
Yeah, that sounds
as
cool.
As our first foray.
Yeah, sure.
Why? As our first foray into the X-Men with Marvel.
Yeah. And so now on the positive or negative, depending on where you're at, the people that did the animation this go around are already established. They get a lot of work. They did the Voltron series on Netflix. They did the Korra Avatar series as well. They did Dota, which is also on Netflix. They did the two Witcher movies as well. So this studio is a Korean studio. They got some chops. They definitely have a portfolio, and they've been pretty popular. And then before X-Men actually dropped, the showrunner, the lead writer, he got fired unceremoniously, and everyone was like, "What happened? Why did this guy get fired?" So this is all the context before the first episode even drops. So now we'll start. Well, I guess we'll do both the episodes at the same time because they're kind of tied together, anyways. But
there's a little more context because it was actually supposed to, if I'm not mistaken, premiere last year. Mm-hmm. And it was like many other things that we're getting this year, House of Dragon, The Boys, Dune Part 2 was supposed to have released last year, but was affected by the strikes, both the actors and the writers strike. So, again, even more, you know, it's been sort of in the collective talking internet and everything for the last two and a half years.
Mm. Yeah, totally. So it's a lot of hype. It's a lot of stuff that's going on. And so with that, I think the people that were really nostalgic for it were really hyped about it. You know, I think it was a hunger because after X-Men the Animated Series, there was X-Men Evolution, aka Dawson's Creek X-Men. And
Waffle Creek X-Men.
It was basically like a CW teen drama, but then
it was X-Men Evolution is what it was called.
But it was all in the WB, which was pre CW.
Yeah,
you know, yep. They still did the teen thing. That was their brand, like up and down. So
yeah. It wasn't terrible to their credit. It was better than the Fox X-Men animated series.
Yeah.
It looks a lot better, and storytelling was a lot better.
Yeah, so fun fact, the storyboard artist and the main character designer are students of the teacher that taught us, my school, figure drawing. And so, like, a lot of the, like, style and all that kind of stuff kind of came from the same school. So we kind of learned from the same people. So that's part of the reason why I was like, oh, shit, I know that style. And I kind of looked it up and it kind of followed that. So I was like, oh, okay, let me check this out.
X-Men Evolution, right?
Yeah, X-Men Evolution.
Okay. Yeah.
So the main character designer and a lot of the storyboard artists were from the same kind of school of art that I learned from. So it was actually pretty cool. And then the other thing after that was Wolverine and the X-Men that was based off of a comic. And the Wolverine and the X-Men, again, off rip, it kind of sounds silly. Like, why is Wolverine leading the X-Men? Because that doesn't sound good. However, the comic book Wolverine and the X-Men is actually really, really good. Purely because Wolverine should not be leading the X-Men. And that's the whole point of the whole book. And that's why it makes it good, because he's not Cyclops. And so that's where they'd have a lot of fights. He's a lot more unorthodox or whatever. But anyways, Wolverine and X-Men actually worked out really well. Story was great.
Pacing was decent. The art looked good.
Yep.
It wasn't as cloying as you would think Wolverine leading the X-Men would be. It wasn't bad.
Yeah. And they did a really good job. And when I worked at Marvel, I got to ask the question of why didn't it get renewed? And what I heard was it was a Canadian production, I believe. And they were in talks to renew it. But something happened in terms of like either a union problem or behind the scenes problem, but it was fully supposed to be renewed. And then whatever the negotiations of whatever it was broke down, and then it kind of got left by the wayside. And
that was on Nickelodeon, wasn't it?
I don't know, actually. A good question.
I believe it was. I can't remember exactly.
One of the two.
I don't remember exactly when. Because how many years passed between the end of Evolution 2 that it was quite some time, right?
It was a while.
Or something like that. Yeah, it was 5 or 7.
Definitely. I would see. Yeah, it was some time because they. Sorry, I think X-Men Evolution was in the '00s. I think that was. I think it was the aughts. I think, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, Ruby and the X-Men, far superior, man. That shit was good. It was actually fun. Like, yeah, okay. So Wolverine X-Men was 2000 to 2003. Mm-hmm. X-Men Evolution was 2000 to 2003. And Wolverine and the X-Men was Only 2009.
Okay, yeah, because I remember Evolution coming on, debuting when I right around time I was in high school. So it was definitely the early 00s, and I just remember it being a lot different than the Fox show.
And fun fact, I don't think I watched, matter of fact, I know I didn't watch Wolverine and the X-Men until I'd met Cam several years after the fact. And he was like, one of the first things he told me was, yo, you should check it out. It's not bad. I was like, this will be a test of our friendship. Because we hadn't gotten cool like we are now. We had just met. And one of the first things he told me, we had extruded comic book conversation. And one of the first things he said was, oh, nah, you should check it. I was like, all right. We will see. If your judgment is bad, I can't trust you on anything else.
Yeah, and it's the only one that's rewatchable. I mean,
yes. It really is. Yes. It wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It was not bad at all.
And also, so Wolverine X-Men was the one of the reasons why it was good was because it was the main showrunner was a comic book artist. I mean, a comic book writer. And so he was freaking partners of Christopher Yost. And Christopher Yost, coincidentally, was one of the main showrunners for Earth's Mightiest Heroes, Marvel's other really good animation show. And so that showrunner, Craig Kyle, I think his name is, he created X-23, a.k.a. Laura. And so in the comics, and then like, she was also in Wolverine and X-Men. So let's say all of that backstory, X-Men 97, what was your guys, the first two episodes, what's your initial reactions from it?
You know, it's funny because when you say all that, all of that stuff is weighing on this show because Marvel hasn't had a great run in the animation area. And this is, other than What If, sort of their next, entry into trying to beef up their animation game. But just starting off with some of the stuff that I thought worked and that I like. The animation, just put it out there. It was way better. I saw on the internet, someone had, put the side by sides and it was just ridiculous how much better, this anime, I want to use the word articulate that this animation is versus, what was, I mean, the steel that had that was for the Beast, it literally looked like, I mean, he was blue and the background was blue and it literally looked like eyes, coming out of a wall or something, out of a blue wall or something. It just didn't look like anything particular. So the animation definitely, is a step above where it was. And because of that, it made it easy and fun to watch and get into the story that they were telling. And they threw a lot of story at us. And, you know, some of the stuff I remember, some of the stuff I had to look up and kind of remind myself of. I love Cyclops' badass hero landing. I mean, I can never get enough of that. I was like, okay, now this feels more like a X-Men.
That's been trending, that landing.
Yeah, I was going to say that has been on fire on the internet.
I mean, that whole scene was just, it just was a breath of fresh air in terms of
arguably the most X-Men thing they've done between that first series, all the other ones that have come since, and this one.
And even in the movies, I mean, I've never seen in that one episode, I saw more what the X-Men, the zeitgeist of the X-Men, of what they should be than I have in the last 20 years of X-Men TV movies and whatever, you know, like at one point I wrote, I was just going to say, Scott says it was a team effort. It always has been. I was like, now as in a kind of mismatch of good dialogue and corny dialogue, that was a good line to remind everybody that's watching that this is what the X-Men should be. It should not just be about Wolverine or Rogue or Jean. It's supposed to be about the whole damn team.
Yep. 100%. I totally agree. And I think they did a couple of good little touches, like the blast landing was one of them. When he saves Sunspot and he uses his blast to do a sidestep back, like that was dope. So there's a lot of little small touches with Cyclops, which is cool. And I think they kind of redeemed his character because he was 100% a bitch in fucking X-Men animated series. And Cyclops fans still talk about that to this day, 30 years later, how upset with it. Like, I'm not the biggest Cyclops, but I'm not a hater of him. I'm like, oh, he's cool sometimes. But like the animated series, they really made him a bitch. And so in one episode, they were like, no, Cyclops is actually dope, guys. Let me just show you guys how it is. And I think they definitely redeemed him.
Yeah, and they kind of went out of their way, and it was good. It was cool. It wasn't too over the top.
They did it. I think touching on that scene, it was everything about it was, this is just another random Tuesday for the team. Blackbird moves up, no big deal. You know, Sentinel grabs the Blackbird, crushes it. Everybody falls out. No big deal. Cyclops has to use the optic blast to chop off the arm.
To chop the head off.
Yeah, no big deal. And then they're falling out of the sky. Only two or three players can fly. And Cyclops is smiling on some good work, team. The team effort, great job. And they're falling out of the sky and he's grinning. That was, to me, the signal right there. I was like, oh, this is, yep, because this is, That was like a Chris Claremont moment, if ever there was one. Random day, Sentinel attacks, no big deal. You know, where the Blackbird gets blown up, we got Xavier's fortune. We can build another one. It's no big deal. Falling out of the sky, no problem. We got flyers. Scott is unbothered by the fact that they're 10,000 feet in the sky, however many feet in the sky, and they're plummeting towards the Earth. And then he does the arguably the greatest superhero landing in all of non-comic book visuals. That was pretty great. I found myself smiling despite myself. It really, really, and that was indicative of the entire two episodes. It really, really works. And this is somebody who, I was the lone voice of dissent back in the day. I hated, disdain for the Fox X-Men series. Because everybody is seeing now, I saw back then.
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is garbage. I can't, like, I did not make it past season one.
Could you say, Josh, that they made Cyclops a true leader and appreciated him, like how they kind of made Batman the detective he was supposed to be?
Closer to it. It's not perfect, but it's a million times closer than it's ever been in any medium outside of the comic books.
Yeah,
it's,
I agree.
Very close.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was the part that kind of came across where I like that, like you said, the first two episodes to me had a good feel of the team, and each person got a little bit of a shine, didn't matter what it was and how it was. And so you got a good taste of the whole thing. And so I think that they made sure that there is a piece that, okay, let's, oh, this Gambit guy, what is, oh, whoa, he can charge up cards. And then later on, oh, he charges up Wolverine's freaking claws. That's cool. And then,
yeah. And they did, I was saying this to D'Angelo the day after the premiere, they did a good job of the exposition moments. The same way that we love the exposition in Justice League and Justice League Unlimited, where they only it only takes 2 minutes, the minute, 30 seconds, 2 minutes of, you know, my wife is tripping and, you know, we're having problems at home, but, oh, we got this mission to go take care of. And so they got to go off and do the thing. Just those tiny little moments of non-hero interpersonal stuff is what made Justice League. And I have a feeling is the thing that's going to quietly make this series. And they're doing a really good job of that, to my utter shock and surprise. I was prepared to hate this thing, and I got to tell you, the first two episodes won me over.
Yeah, no, it was interesting, and I think that I like that they also, one thing that I noticed is they took the Earth's Mightiest Heroes approach, which was the Avengers cartoon that came out before the very first Avengers movie. And it ran for 2 seasons. And the one thing that they did really well is they had comic book writers be the showrunners from it. So that's from their job, already a good thing. But one thing they did was they used the comics as they should for something that's a medium that's not the comics. So they took a bunch of the stories, figured out which ones kind of work together and smashed them together. So in one episode, you would get 2 or 3 different stories from the comics, but it would make sense. And I like that in these 2 episodes, there's about 3 or 4 different stories they kind of jumbled in there, but it all worked for what it needed to be.
I will say too,
they plowed through story.
But the pacing made sense. That's why it worked for me.
Yeah, and I think also one of the things that they did very quickly in that first episode was get through a lot of the lingering things that left from the previous show, from the 90s show, where it ended. And, you know, immediately they start to set up a new something for this next generation, as opposed to just lingering in on previous conflicts and things like that. Immediately the Sentinels and Trask and Master Mold, they're all dealt with, you know, and we get a setup for something, a lot of fresh things. You know, we left on that second episode not knowing, you know, what's going to happen with Storm. Obviously, I'm not buying that they're about to remove Storm from the equation at all. So there's something interesting there, you know, and I think they hit on a lot of good points. I think some of the dialogue is still, you know, it can use a little bit, a little less. I would say early on at the beginning, Storm's dialogue felt a little corny, and some of the other places did as well, but it gets better as it goes on. And I remember even marking down that they're staying true to the era, because at one point when Jubilee goes, I don't know, when they're in the danger room, what's his name? Roberto, which character, what's his
Sunspot.
Yes. Sunspot. Says video games are for nerds. And I was like, oh, video games ain't cool yet.
Right.
That's right. It's the 90s. Video games are not cool yet. Going to the club and doing that is cool.
But to Cam's point, you know, they're mimicking the very same thing that made Earth's Mightiest Heroes work. In the first 2 episodes, you get the Trial of Magneto, you get a New Mutant shout out, you touch on Magneto and Rogue in Savage Land. You touch on Life Death, which is when Storm lost her powers and went on her like 2-year, 3-year long vision quest to figure out who she was without her powers, and then gets them back eventually. Charles's death is automatic. Shi'ar Empire. They're gonna be involved. He'll be back before the end of the season, I promise you. There's no way that they're going to go an extended period without Charles.
And I hope they do keep him out for most of the season, then bring him back at the end or something like that. Because I think it gives a good dynamic for the rest of the characters to shine, and they all get to kind of do that. And so, like, even with Executioner showing up, and that's from another story as well.
Right.
And that was
number 6. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So in those 2 episodes, like, just from as a nerdy comic book person, there was at least anywhere from 6 to 8 different storylines playing out. You had, you know, little baby Cable made a little appearance real quick. And, you know, so I think
Goblin Queen. So that's 7.
Yep. Goblin Queen as well. So, but again, from a comic book nerd situation, yo, they were just jam packing stuff in 2 episodes. And it was like, yo, and it worked, because they put pieces of those things in there to pay off later. So if you're us, we're like, okay, I wonder when you're going to introduce this. When are we going to find Storm in the Morlocks in the sewers of New York? And she's like, you know, a badass leader of a bunch of like weird mutants, you know, like, when's that going to play out? You know, like, and then she's hanging out with her, you know, BFF/maybe lover Callisto or something.
Yeah. Well, she's got to go find Forge first to get her powers back.
Yeah, I mean, it was there's a lot of, I would say that they came out swinging, and even the nice little touch about Morph and Mr. Sinister and this PTSD, you know, like they were, again, I don't know if any of that serves a newer audience, but for where it is, I think even if you're coming in fresh, you can kind of keep up with, you can kind of jump into the party and not feel like you've missed anything. Cause I gotta tell you, the reason I made this remark to Josh, the reason I know this show is 10 times better than the original one is because I've tried twice to rewatch the original. And even after watching these two episodes, I said, okay, let me go watch some of the seminal episodes, like the last one or the ones with Apocalypse. 2 minutes in, stop. Cannot do it. I cannot do it. It is, that animation is that bad. And looking at it now, it makes it even worse.
Mm-hmm. You know what, D'Angelo? I felt the same way when I tried to go revisit the show 24 and I saw you had a Palm Pilot and I was like, I can't do this. It was too, I was too far removed.
Well, that's a whole nother. When me and Dwayne sort of were tag teaming, watching 24 during the pandemic, it was fun. I once you get set in your brain that it is what it is and it was when it was, at least for me, I was fine. It does, but I will admit it does take a second to adjust to.
Yeah, old technology. Old technology does take you out sometimes. I mean, I think that's the thing. I mean,
I like it because I think it just reminds you of what the medium is, really. It's almost a time capsule. Like, right. Those periods are captured in a very specific, you'll never see that unless it's a period piece. Now you're not going to see Palm Pilots used casually like that to Kale's
point. Yeah. Well, the other thing too is like that movie Hackers, right? When Hackers came out, they're like, oh shit, she has a 28K modem.
Yeah, exactly. It's very specific to that time.
Oh, that was amazing. I watched that recently and I was like, yo, it's just mad entertaining, but I love the references of all the technology because I'm like, this is great. But
on a Palm Pilot, so don't hate.
Wow, that's something, Josh.
It was excruciating. Even back then, it was excruciating.
Okay, so then now that we've, you know, so the parts of X-Men that we did like, and, you know, setting that aside, where's the parts that you guys felt that it could have got better or they could have, they did a pretty good job for two episodes out the gate, kind of punching everybody, be like, yo, we're here. This is not like the old one, but it's still connected to it. What do you guys think they could have done better in just an overall situation?
That's what I would have done differently. See, honestly, I'm not into the whole connecting it to the old show. Like, honestly, I would have rather if taken that animation, use the theme song. I'm fine with the remake. I think that these things need to be specific to this era. I think the nostalgia thing could have worked for like a movie or something, but for a whole series connected to that past arc, that's the only thing that I'm really not 100% sure about. And I think that maybe they should have reconsidered, but there's possibility to do other stuff on the side. But as far as the storytelling, I mean, you guys pointed out to a lot of things that went over my head because I haven't read, I'm not familiar with those specific things or those comic arcs. So that has me interested in where they will go with everything. But, you know, I don't know if there's anything in particular that I could criticize about those two episodes. I think they were really good. They were surprisingly good. The only thing I would add is the dialogue. Yeah, I think it's a tad too melodramatic still.
Yeah, I would say for me, it was like, yeah, the dialogue, but I also had to remind myself it's supposed to be set in 97. So, okay, when it was like, I think Cyclops said not, and I think something else that was, it just sounded goofy, but I was like, wait a minute, it is 97. Okay, let's give him a pass. I actually kind of agree. I think I actually would have liked it to be set in 2024, 30 years later, and then you find out what happened to everyone. And so, you know, maybe Cyclops and Jean Grey are divorced now, and then because they lost their baby and they never got him back. And then he comes back as Cable or something like that. Or you find, you know, Wolverine's out in Australia hanging out, smoking cigars like he normally does or whatever. But it would have been more fun for me to see them where they ended up 30 years. And then we're tracing back how they got there. And I think animation wise and everything else, I was fine with it. Like I've watched the Korra series and Fall of Ultron, I'm used to those guys' style. I think stuff like Young Justice is arguably better in terms of the animation and how they do stuff, and their character designers are better.
For sure.
But I enjoyed it for what it was. And so I would have liked it to have, you know, I would go with D'Angelo's thing. I was like, yo, use the same theme song, but now legit it's 30 years later. We have to figure out where, you know, we have to figure out where these characters are and where they've been.
All I'm saying is I need 5 episodes to see where. Yeah, no, I'm going to say I need 5 episodes to see where this goes. And if it's still good, I'll tap in.
Same. Yeah, I think basically what everybody said, you know, piggybacking on Cam's statement. Yeah, it's pretty much the same thing. You know, it's a little early to tell, but if these first 2 episodes are any indicator, they're on the right track. They're moving the right way. They're pacing it. If they're going to pace it the way that Earth's Mightiest Heroes was, I wasn't necessarily in love with that, but it didn't kill the show. They were just blasting through stuff so damn fast that you were almost forced to watch. And so whether that works for or against it, at the end of the day, like I said, it still makes you watch. So it's not like, if that's my biggest issue, then they've already won. I gotta say, as someone who hated the original, this is a breath of fresh air. I'm shocked. I was prepared to not like it. Once I saw X-Men 97, I was like, oh, this is gonna be trash. They pick it up right where they left off. Where they left off wasn't very great, very good, frankly. So, you know, this is gonna be garbage. And pleasant surprise, it is very much the opposite so far. Time will tell. I agree with Cam. 5 episodes will be the telltale. But if these 2 episodes, if you have to judge it based on these 2 episodes, they're already ahead of the game.
Yeah,
definitely. And I think they're doing 8 or 10 or something like that, I believe. Somewhere around there. So I think that's got to be cool. So, I'm really curious. They came out strong. Now we can address the controversy.
What do you do, Cameron?
So, fun fact, when the show was announced, the lead showrunner was a black gay man. He'd already done some writing with Marvel already. So it was a very big, nod to diversity and inclusion and blah, 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 blah. So that was kind of like how it was hailed. So that was when the show was announced that it was happening, and he was announced as a showrunner, and one of the main writers, in terms of diversity and inclusion, it's a good thing. Hey, awesome. Marvel's doing their thing, blah, 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 blah. Cool. Now fast forward X amount of years later, it's about to drop, and then he gets fired. Everyone's like, hey, why did he get fired? This is weird. I don't understand. And so then, all his socials are gone. He's dropped off all press. All this, anything that he had to do with the show, cut. Marvel and Disney did not say anything official. They just said, hey, we parted ways, and that's what it is. So a little bit more time goes by, and people find out, oh, he had an OnlyFans.
OnlyFans that he started while working on the show.
Yeah, not the brightest. Not the brightest thing to do when you work for a major billion-dollar company that's a family-friendly first.
To quote the immortal Friday, how you get fired on your day off? The show didn't even start yet, dog.
Yeah, basically. And apparently what put it over the top was the handle, which I still can't find what the actual handle of said OnlyFans was. But again, if you work for Disney and you're doing some unscrupulous shit, you're pretty much asking for it.
Hey, let's not judge sex workers or anyone who does OnlyFans harshly. It's not that it's unscrupulous.
True. But it also is against the brand of the overall family forward Disney.
Yeah, I was going to say that's Disney. That's how that's their bread and butter.
More specifically, the morality clause. Even people who don't work in the industry know that the Disney morality clause is the stuff of legends. If there's nothing else that you know about Disney, you know that their morality clause is beyond ironclad, and they will stick to the letter of that thing if you violate. And so to start one while employed there is just, that's the thing that gets me. It's not that he had one. It's that he had one while he was working there. Like, he started it either at around the same time or after he started working there.
Yeah.
Now, and this guy was the writer?
He was the head writer and the showrunner.
The showrunner. He was the showrunner and executive producer.
Well, and also to give him some grace, there was a writing strike. So, you know, got to do what you got to do.
Fair enough.
You know, but still, you're 100% correct.
Either you kill it the day that the strike is done, you kill that thing, and or you go to Disney brass and go, hey, listen, just so y'all know, this is out there. I did it.
There's no way around that with Disney.
I agree, but
he just should not have went that route to make money working for under contract with Disney. Like that's the sort of bottom line. Like, nobody's judging him for doing it. It's just, you know, again, you're working for Disney, and they, like you said, the morality clause is non-negotiable for them. You know, it's like when we finally, you know, eventually when we talked about it on here, all of us knew that at some point, as that thing drug on, that it didn't bode well for Jonathan Majors with his whole situation. Because at the end of the day, they're only kind of not acting because nothing has been proven or definitive or no decisions have been made. But for the most part, it was almost a done deal that he was going to be out because Disney doesn't want that association. I was surprised that they held on, that they didn't fire him sooner. But, you know,
well, because he's a central pillar of what was going on, like what was about to go down at Disney, I think they probably would have given him a pass if he was acquitted. Like, all right, well, yep, he's innocent, whatever. Like, let's keep it moving. And so they waited to see what the outcome was going to be. And a convicted criminal for the thing, which is, you know, it's a little disingenuous to even go that far, because what he got pinched for was like happenstance. He was trying to get away. When you come to find out all this time later, he's trying to get away, and he basically roughs her up trying to get away from her. And I say rough her up, rough up the woman that he was with in air quotes. He was really just like, she was trying to hold on to him. He was trying to get away. I think she like broke a finger or something, or he broke her finger trying to get away from her. Something like
that.
And that's the charge.
Well, no, I don't mean to relitigate that. I don't even mean to relitigate that. I'm just using it as another example of Disney. People know the reputation of Disney, and you know, it's unfortunate he lost his job, but again, it's, you know, you walked into it. Like,
yeah, exactly. You're working for a place that, yeah, you're working for a place that's all, you got to be under your P's and Q's. And so if you walk in there and not have that expression, you know, it's going to happen. Like, people have been fired for less. You know, James Gunn got fired for a tweet.
Yep.
What's her face? UFC chick. She got fired for like
Gina Carano.
Gina Carano.
Yeah,
she got fired for like five or six tweets. You know, like, So you have a whole on OnlyFans and you work for a quote unquote family forward friendly brand. Yeah, it's kind of you're basically counting down to you about to get fired. So it's really
you're working on a TV show that's also marketed to children. Yeah. You know, they sell these toys and all that stuff. Like all that stuff is why they're just, you know, again, it's known. And so this is one of those bad choice roads kind of thing.
But we also can call a spade, you know. Yeah, Disney seems to be fair on how it judges people. But if you black or any person that's a person of color, you definitely got to be on your toes.
Free.
Can't have anything. I mean, anything that can give them any inclination to let you go. This is Disney. Like, you know what I'm saying? So the optics just look bad. And as a black man in America, you should know better to give them any reason or any ammunition to let you go for whatever reason.
Totally agree.
I just want to know how he thought that was going to end. Like,
he probably thought it was going to slip under the radar. Cause I mean, in order to know he's got an OnlyFans, you got to know he's got an OnlyFans. So yeah. he was hoping that under the cover and the guise of unless cats is looking at, like, are you sleeping? If you think people ain't looking at OnlyFans, they could look, but they ain't on it. They're not doing it. They're not actually filming things or shooting things for OnlyFans. So they could look. And if word spreads that you on OnlyFans and you have a job at the mouse, that's going to be what it is. I don't even want to speculate to answer your question. I don't want to give would be speculation. And I don't want to speculate because then it gets to his state of mind and what was.
No, I mean, because it was more so a rhetorical thing. Because honestly, at this point, what difference does it make? You know, right. It's all of the damage has been done. He's lost his job. And now here we are. The show is off to a great start. And, you know, for him and I guess for relevance to our conversation, it's unfortunate that, you know, a black artist, a writer, a person who probably had a good future ahead of him is, you know, fired because he made a stupid decision.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I don't know what reasons he had for making the decision, but given the circumstances, I think most can agree it wasn't the best.
Yeah, I think he wrote the first two episodes. I'm not sure which ones he wrote after that. It'll be very interesting to see all that rolls out. But it's quite unfortunate because he basically came out swinging, man. He did a really good job with these two episodes to kind of bring X-Men up into the current situation. So kind of it sucks, but unforced errors, like, yikes, man.
What did he work on before this?
I'm not entirely. He did a couple books, but I'm not sure which ones.
Oh, okay. Well, no, I'm saying for Disney.
I'm not actually. That's a good question. I'm not. I knew he wrote a couple of comics, but I'm not sure what Disney stuff specifically he was working with.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a unforced errors. Just like kind of like what Cam said, man. You work for the mouse, and you are a person of color. They don't need a reason to fire you. They're looking for it. As sadly to say, you know, we got our P's and Q's, all that. All right. So now, I would say for you guys, where do you guys hope to see? That will be our final word. Would be like, where do you hope to see this go in terms of X-Men 97 specifically? Because this to me kind of feels like almost like a Marvel Animation Renaissance. Because Marvel Animation, they basically, when I was there for 3 years, and that was around the time they closed Marvel Animation Studios. So all their shows that what they were doing were pretty much outsourced. So the quote unquote studio part of it was just the leaders, heads and stuff. And then they were outsourcing writing, outsourcing animation to Korea, to Japan, to other places. So they were really just churning out, you know, the 17th version of Spider-Man and the shitty version of Guardians of the Galaxy and some group shows and stuff like that. So this is their first, like, yeah, Agents of Smash, like dumb shit like that. So like, to me, this is their first foray into like, hey, Marvel Animation Studios is back. We're coming out the gate. This is what it is. Where do you hope they kind of go from here?
I mean, I don't know, to be honest. I hope that they just continue to produce, you know, balanced animated shows that are based on Marvel characters. I think from here, I would like to see them start to do some fresh things that aren't what ifs and remakes and nostalgia trips. Like, let's see something fresh with some Marvel characters and properties that aren't quite used. Maybe they don't even exist in any universe or particular, but, you know, they could be good animated shows. I'd like to see that. And but for X-Men, you know, we'll see. I think as long as the writing continues the way it is, I think they can go as far as they Disney Plus wants it to go. But because I think it'll always have an audience, even if it is the 35 and up, people will watch it if it's good. Those people who still are our age and still enjoy animated series. So, yeah, just make some new and interesting things. I think that's the key to that's what I want from everything now. I want the nostalgia to stop to end. I want the nostalgia to end because we are not in the 90s anymore. We are not in the 20th century anymore. We are well into the 21st century, and it's sad to keep seeing all these properties brought back for lack of and have millions and millions of dollars poured into them for lack of creativity. You know, this is a year in which we're getting we got a new Ghostbusters film and a trailer release for Beetlejuice 2. I'm just saying.
I was going to piggyback off that and just inquire, like, who is the target audience? Because again, X-Men 97 speaks to our generation, and I'm curious to see if Disney and the people behind this will try to appeal to the new youngsters and still keep us intact with two good episodes from what I'm hearing. And I want to see how that works. And I also want to see if this really does jumpstart what Cam had said about the Marvel animation, because like I said, I wasn't really paying attention too much to Marvel animation, but I did watch a lot of DC animation. Love what they were doing over there and a lot of good work. But if Marvel can, you know, use this as a platform to really get into some good stories, that'd be interesting. But also the downside is they're on Disney Plus. Like, kind of wish this was on HBO or Max or something. Like, maybe we get some dark overtones or something, like a different story, something that we've never seen before. But let's see where this goes.
I mean, they're already ahead of the game in my book, because I am definitely a very big hater of everything in every visual media and every moving picture medium that has come out for X-Men for the most part. I wouldn't say all of it, but like 99% of it. The only X-Men film that I liked was First Class. And Days of Future Past, despite the fact that it was a terribly written movie. Everything else is garbage.
Josh, you did like Logan, right? You liked Logan.
Oh, sorry. Yes, I loved Logan. Yes, and Wolverine. But those, I'm talking about like X-Men team films.
Team films, yeah.
Yeah. They've all been pretty much, the majority of them, the overwhelming majority of them have been pretty bad. I wasn't a huge X-Men Evolution fan. Wolverine the X-Men was cool. It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. But this is good. This is really good, even. And I was prepared to hate it. I was prepared for it to be bad. And yeah, so I mean, as far as like what to expect, I mean, if they stay on, as long as they stay the course, they've laid a really solid foundation. So as long as they stay the course, I think they're good money. You know, to answer Cam's question, I think they're shooting for two audiences. They're obviously by going the X-Men 97 route, they're very blatantly chasing after from you guys' generation to mine, all of whom watched. You know, watch the original. But yeah, I think, and they're hoping to probably garner garner a following with kids. It's not, it is still an animated series, and it's not like an adult oriented animated series or anything. And it looks good. If they chase the Earth's Mightiest Heroes format, then they're good money for as long as they want to do it. I agree with Cam. They can do it for as long as they want, and there's nothing stop. As long as they stay true to what they, to where they've started, there's no reason for them to let this, you know, to not let this rip for like 5 years.
We'll see if they can serve two masters.
I don't think that I disagree about the being able to market it to kids, because I think, yeah, it's a it's an animated show, but a lot of the storytelling is not, it's not something that kids are gonna get into. I mean, that's a lot of adult storytelling in those first two episodes.
I mean, one would argue that that's why kids will watch it.
Yeah, well, I think also from, I was going to say there, it definitely serves two masters. The X-Men animated series is definitely going to get some burn from people that have nostalgia that going back. They're like, oh yeah, this was a show, and they're gonna, and then Disney Plus is going to go back and they'll probably watch it. But I think I agree. I was like, the nostalgia thing is now, it's beyond old, but you were definitely hitting on, you know, our age group, 35 to 50, essentially, that remember the show back then. And so I'm curious to see how they're going to reel in the kids now, or the teenagers, I should say. That's pretty much what the demographic kind of is. I think it's like M14 or something like that. I'm curious to see if they're going to get to a level, say like a Young Justice, because one thing about Young Justice, to their credit, was they had pretty mature themes in their shows, but also kind of kept it light at the same time. So I'm curious to see how far they're going to go and how they're going to balance that out, or if they're going to kind of keep it Marvel and keep it nice and light and, you know, just very touch on, like, the one thing I was going to bring up, which I forgot, was there was a slight, not controversy, but a brouhaha, as everyone calls it, about Executioner and Cyclops's conversation. And that was more just like, everyone just needs something to talk about. But I like that the kids these days, who are a lot more conscious about a lot of different things than we were back then, kind of picked up on that conversation of how they were talking about it. And so I think it'll be interesting to see how it'll be received overall in terms of going forward. If like, yeah, are they going to touch on a lot more of the discrimination stuff and the ostracizing and all that? Are they going to touch on bigotry and those types of things? So it'll be very interesting to see how they address it, and if they kind of do with kid gloves, or they kind of go straight at it, or whatever it's going to be.
Well, see, and that's kind of what I mean by, it's not, I don't know if the audience, if you're having a conversation about discrimination and in a time where it's a real, the conversation is more nuanced than it was in the 90s. So I don't know where that leaves it, where that leaves the show in terms of how it can delve in and weave in and out of that. But I did like that the scene that you brought up kind of conjured up two separate conversations, one about privilege and discrimination, but then the other about the ethics of superhero and how Scott worked hard not to open his eyes because he knew he would obliterate that dude. Even though the guy was punching the living shit out of him. You know, Scott is, and I think that that's a little detail that is important in an age where we've gone through this period where there's been this desire to turn superheroes to their darkest side, their darker sides, and kind of lose that sort of altruism that drives them. Yes, that's an enemy. Yes, he's a brutal xenophobe, but at the same time, what makes Scott Summers Cyclops a hero is his choice not to use his power, his awesome power, to destroy this guy despite all the things that are happening.
Yeah,
I thought that was good.
Yeah, and that's, and that kind of goes back to the kind of like the Batman or like Spider-Man thing, right? Where they don't kill people, or Superman. Like there's a reason why they are super powerful. They have all these skills, all that stuff, but they choose not to kill because of a certain moral code and that kind of stuff. So I thought, and I think that's one thing that I was like, okay, cool. I was glad that they kind of touched on that. Here's a clear bigot against this dude specifically, and he's like, okay, I could kill you, but I'm not going to, because that would be you, essentially.
Yeah, that's what, you know, again, we're in the age of the Homelanders and the Omni-Mans and the characters who present that idea that it's incredibly hard to be that powerful and not be and be a Boy Scout like Superman, right, or Captain America, or in this case Scott Summers. But I think that misses the point of why those characters are symbols and why they exist, which is, again, yes, Superman could laser the whole hell out of everything and rule the planet with an iron fist and nobody could stop. But then again, any other person that you meet who is given that power would do that same thing. What makes Superman special is that he knows he could do that, but he refuses to do that.
Mm. Exactly.
And it's the same thing in that situation. But my point being that it's rare that you see, again, in an age where you have the last big Superman movie, you know, he's snapping guys' necks, you know, and things like that. You know, it's good to see the superhero X-Men who's taking like hard punches to the face and to the ribs at the same time learning about his pregnant wife going into labor and still not mad enough or provoked enough to just be like, you know what? I don't even care. I know what I could do. I'm going to laser this dude till he's nothing but atomized dust.
Yep, pretty much. Pretty much.
They're going to, you know, to my point, or to my earlier point, I feel like there's such a starvation because we now live in a world where, you know, you had an X-Men movie practically every 2 to 3 years maximum. So this is the longest stretch that we've gone without an X-Men movie. Dark Phoenix came out in 2019, I believe.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're right.
The New Mutants movie, which we will not fully acknowledge as anything, came out in 2020. So, you know.
Then you had Legion and you had The Gifted and you had,
right.
You had all these attempts,
right,
for the last 20 years to make something out of X. There was a steptoeing around,
right,
making everything but X-Men proper.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a starvation from kids and from the target, from the idolized target audience of, you know, 18 to 35. And then the bonus of, you know, 35 to 50. So, you know, I think there's something there. I think there's, you know, for younger fans, if this is all that's there, they're going to consume it.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because, like, you know, mm-hmm. Again, we came from the era where there was no freaking, you know, X-Men anything. So the fact that, like, we got it, we were just like, thank God. And now.
What? Not me. I was like, oh, yay, there's an X-Men cartoon. Oh.
But I'm finding that, you know, again, and then maybe I'm just, it's just the teenagers that are in my family, but they're uninterested in the X-Men because the X-Men have fallen so far out of the pop culture lexicon, and the movies have been not great. And then the other part about that is that comic book reading, the culture of reading comic books in print or digital otherwise, is kind of encapsulated by our generations. And I don't think it's translating into, you know, kids are now still reading X-Men. So that's the challenge there. I think I don't know if that was, he could speak for himself, but Cam was speaking about in terms of how do they get a new audience? Yes, they're going to have the people who have grown up on X-Men, and because we're not like, we're not ancient. there's a lot of us out there, and those who have children, they will introduce their kids to it, and then their kids will decide whether or not, because it's not like kids aren't enjoying things from previous generations and they don't find new life. But I'm just wondering how that will work for X-Men being all the many things that we've all mentioned of the, that's taken place over the last 20 or so years, plus the fact that they've been, again, out of the pop culture scene for the last 10 or more years, or either that or haven't been favorable. There's now an entire group of kids who grew up on those movies and know nothing and only know that as their reference, in the same way that a Bryan Singer will say he used the animated series as a building block for those movies. So that's the challenge with X-Men. I think that's why I said I believe that the next MCU, no matter what, should be built around the X-Men and Fantastic Four.
Yeah,
I agree. It should not be trying to fit them into what's going on now. It should be, that might be, all that stuff might still be in the mythology, but we're ignoring that so that we can lift these guys up, because they are the ones that people have not had a chance to actually see the best of the best in live action movies. So
and also people forget that, like, you know, the MCU as it stands is the B-list characters of Marvel's like lexicon.
That's what I was
saying. You know, like the Iron Man, Captain America, Hulk, like from the comics, they were B-level. They were there. They're a big deal, but they weren't a big deal. It was X-Men. It was Spider-Man. Or those are the more popular books. And so
not for nothing, you know, Miracle accomplished.
Yeah.
Because that was a huge, huge gamble.
Oh, yeah, and absolutely.
No guarantee that any of that was going to work.
Not
only did they do it, they were able to repeat it set for 20 years up to Endgame. Mission accomplished. You have conducted miracle on top of miracle for 20 years, and now it's time to, they're not going to stop making movies, as much as we may, you know, bandy about the suggestion that, you know, they shut it down before they dilute the brand. At the end of the day, it's they're hanging on to those IPs and making some sort of content. The game is content. They're not going to stop. So I don't think they're going to take a break as much as we may suggest that they do. And I think this is, and to the point that I was getting ready to make, this is, you know, X-Men 97 is a stopgap measure. They're waiting for all the old Fox contracts to expire so that they can cherry pick who, if anyone, that they bring back. And they're not beholden to use any of the actors that Bryan Singer and Fox were using.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think that's the thing where it's, so it'll be very, very interesting if they, you know, if this is a good opening salvo to kind of get people reintroduced to the X-Men in terms of the thing, and then they can kind of slow rock it out. I'm curious to see how they do it. I agree with D'Angelo as well. Like, I think centering on, you know, the MCU quote unquote reboot around X-Men would be super interesting. And I think the Deadpool thing is kind of poised to kind of do that in its own silly way, which I think is going to be kind of interesting as well. So we'll see if they can pull it off. Cause, like, you know, I, even from jump with Iron Man coming out, I remember when Iron Man first came out, I was kind of like, I don't really care about Tony Stark, but I'll go watch it. And I was like, oh, this is dope. and then they figured it out for, you know, a solid 20 years. And then now they got all the rights back to almost everything. Now, I think now officially, I think Disney out owns everything back from when Marvel sold some stuff off of. So,
Still, they don't own Sony. I mean, not Sony, Spider-Man outright.
I think, Spider-Man is the last project, but they're doing a joint venture for anything going forward since Civil War.
Three properties that they currently don't have. They don't have the Hulk. They don't have the Submariner, and what's the third one? Oh, it's Spider-Man. Yeah, they don't have those. Everything else is back in the barn.
Well, I mean, look, I agree with you guys. I think that, like you said, the animated show is a good stopgap to reintroduce, remind people who and what the X-Men are at their best in terms of outside of the comic books. I would be hard pressed to think that they're gonna, I agree with you, Josh. I don't think they're gonna ever stop making movies. And, you know, again, why should they? They own the stuff. My thing is, when those contracts expire, that we get a fresh take on the X-Men.
Yeah, I think that will be the make or break for me. If they're gonna kind of tug on those strings, kind of like with Hugh Jackman coming back as Wolverine, or are they gonna give us a fresh take, recast the whole nine top to bottom, kind of like with the Fantastic Four, which I feel they're probably gonna go in that route. Honestly, I think Hugh Jackman kind of, it was one of those things where, like, I like Ryan. It's fun. This is silly. Fuck it. Let's do it. And then from there. But this is my last one because I'm old.
Yeah. And so I think that that's fair, because, again, who knows if Ryan Reynolds is about to keep going as Deadpool in the MCU. This could be the final thing that he does for Deadpool. I don't know that for sure, but
yeah,
it could be. And so I would like that once they finally got Hugh Jackman in the yellow suit and let this be over. Get a new Wolverine, because, like I said, Hugh Jackman's done this for the last 20-something years.
Yep.
He was originally done with it after Logan, but like you said, money plus the fact that Ryan Reynolds is probably somebody that a lot of people like to work with.
Yeah.
And also a
boy.
Yeah, again, it's fun. He's not looking to win no Oscars. I support it, and it is. But after that, again, tabula rasa. Going to play.
100%. Thank you everybody for listening to us. We ranted and got to get geeky on the nerd stuff, especially on the comics. Overall, we generally enjoyed it. I think it has a bright future. I'm very curious to see where it goes. That's all I can really say about that. Look at that, all positive and stuff. This is good.
Shocking to me.
Look at that. It's good.
It's very ironic, because considering how we all feel about the animated series, that this one is actually getting more praise than we've given a lot of things.
Yeah, 100%. That means they're doing something right. So let me
check outside to see if a pig was flying.
I know. Make sure that the moon is not bleeding right now. Like, we got to check all the signs.
Yep. So, once again, this is Blurred Lies. Thanks for listening, and we are out. Peace, everybody.
Peace.